Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Oh, that's a load off my mind. Whew.
Are we going to get into this again? Didn't we do
No, I
enough of
guess
this last
not.
time about your loads?
No comment.
No comment till the time limit's up.
Yeah.
I just like that some people get that reference. I don't know if either of you do.
Don't think so.
From the Adventures of Superman, when the dude is hanging out in the block of concrete until he's declared legally dead so that he can escape
Oh yeah, that's one of
prison.
my favorite. That's one of the ones that I remember the most, but I don't remember that actual comment.
And the time is running out that he's going to be declared dead,
Right.
and they
So
do something where Superman has to.
he changes the atomic clock.
Yeah, but he has to like be on camera or something. So he just keeps having a recording, because it's not really him. It's his friend like with the cape on or something, and he just
Okay.
has him keep pressing the recording every time they ask him a question. No comment until the time limit is up, while the real Superman is out to get the guy.
Oh, because the guy's watching whatever
Yes.
on. Yeah, I
Is
think I remember there was
that or is
such
that
it
or
was
is
such
that
an
not fascinating?
such an intricate plot point that this guy did just to escape, you know.
Just go to another country. Leave the
Yeah, but
jurisdiction. Be good.
Superman's international.
Superman is, but the laws aren't necessarily. You go somewhere where they won't extradite you. You're done.
Superman, I am the law.
I am the law.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations!
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You're Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast. And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro.
Bloody hell.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets. I'm Paul Spataro, and I am joined, as ever, by Mr. Andrew T. Leyland.
Hello.
And Mr. William T. Robinson, Dr. William T. Robinson.
I am old, Dr. Bill. Yes, yes, I am.
Today we are here to cover the Deep Space Nine Season 3 episode, Distant Voices. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I'm always hearing distant voices, so it's not really that weird to me. This just seems like a day in the life.
Well, don't turn around, don't look away. There's something with the voices say. Yeah, I think
Commissars
that's
in
it.
Town?
No, that's a different song.
Okay.
Although that line is in that song too.
So, before we get
well,
to that,
you're the one that's closest to old Dr. Bashir. Do you hear voices, Paul?
I hear voices.
So, we got any Star Trek news?
Yeah, well, not much has happened since we recorded the last episode, but I did have a recollection. We, off the record, started to talk about the Netflix Love of Spock show, or movie, film, feature, documentary. Which I have not yet had a chance to watch. It is in my queue, but I haven't seen it yet. Andy, you've seen it, right?
No, I noticed that it was on Netflix last night, but I didn't get to watch it because I thought I may doze off, and I ended up playing Battlefront, with Dr. Bill and Ben anyway.
So what I'll say is the three of us should all maybe plan on having seen that one by the next time we record.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a good idea.
And then we could just have a general discussion about it, you know, before we talk about the next episode after this.
Okay.
But in the meanwhile, there's another one on there, which if you go onto Netflix and you search up Star Trek, it does not come up. And I would have been totally unfamiliar with this, except Mike Bailey mentioned it, and that was what got me searching for it. It's called Chaos on the Bridge. Have either of you seen that?
I have watched Chaos on the Bridge, yes. And Shatner has another documentary on Netflix, The Captains. I've watched both of them.
Oh, that's another one for me to watch. I watched Chaos on the Bridge at Mike's suggestion, and I found that to be very entertaining. It's probably, I didn't really see, but I'm thinking it's about an hour long or so.
Yeah.
And it's a documentary. It's William Shatner interviewing various people about, I guess it's like the first two seasons of The Next Generation and how it came to be put together and the different people who had input into it and changes of direction that they had. Things, I one of the more entertaining things I found about it was when they were trying to cast the captain. And there was some
disagreement. Oh, yeah, because they had an interview with the guy who... Stephen Macht, was it?
I'm not sure of the guy's name.
Yeah, they had an interview with the guy that Roddenberry wanted, as opposed to Patrick Stewart. Yeah, that was really interesting.
And then there was the... You know, they had Patrick Stewart come in, and they were like, but he's bald! So they had him reread for the part with, like, this... He had a hairpiece, and they had to have...
They had to have
it overnighted. So that he could wear it as he read for the part. And they said it, you know, like they were like, yeah, he's great, but that hairpiece looks awful.
Is that a tribble?
And meanwhile, like, while they're doing these cuts, they would keep having artists' renderings of what they're talking about. So they actually have, like, a little, you know, 2-second, 3-second cartoon of Patrick Stewart wearing a hairpiece. Reading for the part. It was amusing, but it was also informative and entertaining, and I would definitely recommend it. And I think they've done kind of a poor job of publicizing it. Again, like I said, if you do a search for Star Trek, it doesn't even come up.
No, I think I just found it by accident when I was flicking through the documentaries part of Netflix.
It would probably come up if you did a search of William Shatner, maybe, though.
I would think.
Yeah,
but the captain's one is just as good. I think that's slightly longer. That's worth watching as well, because Avery Brooks seems to operate on a different plane of reality to everybody else.
In
an unusual way, but to each their own, you know. But Shatner seems to get on best with Bakula. Him and Scott Bakula have a really good rapport on camera. They really do get on with each other. They bond over the fact that the show ruined their marriages. Granted, William Shatner's proclivity for trying to hit on every woman on the set may have also played a part in ruining his marriage.
I'm just doing a search on Netflix. I did a search for Shatner, and I'm not finding the captains on there.
No. So is Avery Brooks in real life closer to Sisko when he kind of gets that crazy-eyed, over-the-topness that we see every now and then?
No, Avery Brooks in real life is so laid back as to be almost horizontal.
All right, well, if that's his difference from the other actors, I don't really have any issue with that.
No, he's very definitely on a different plane. Mm. And he even interviews Chris Pine. He speaks to Chris Pine as well, so that's interesting. And arm wrestles him.
That's
because he's William Shatner.
You're not.
I get to think that's got to be tough for him. You know, William Shatner, I find...
For William Shatner or Chris Pine?
No, William Shatner. I find him to be an engaging personality, and despite all the criticism I've heard of his, you know, hamming it up for the camera and being a little selfish about his scenes and all of that, even if I accept all of that, I still find him to be a very engaging, charismatic guy who I can't help but like.
Mm.
And
I'm the same way.
To have had 50 years connected to this character, or if we'd have to go back 7 years, so 43 years connected to this character, where he, to a large extent, defined your public persona, and now all of a sudden somebody else is playing the part. It's got to be just a real tough thing to acclimate yourself to, and I think, for the most part, he's pretty much said the right things about that.
Mm.
But it can't be easy.
No, it's been very diplomatic for him. Because Leonard Nimoy actually got to hand over, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Shatner didn't get that. I mean, he actually says in the... Is it in Chaos on the Bridge? Somebody actually point blank asks Shatner, what was it like when you first heard about The Next Generation? And Shatner's kind of taken aback a bit. But he leaves it in the documentary, which is all fair play to him. And he actually admits in that it was very difficult. To know that they were going to carry on without it.
Talking about casting Patrick Stewart,
Right.
And they asked him, you know, I think it was Jonathan Frakes, asked him, you know, wasn't it difficult for you to have somebody else being the captain of the Enterprise?
Mm.
And yeah, he comes right out and admits it. Yeah, it took a little while to accustom myself to the thought.
Mm. So I actually like that he let that in. So for a guy who is allegedly as driven by ego as he is, he left in a moment in that documentary where he is, the Shatner facade falls away for a second, and you get the impression he's totally honest in that moment. And I like more of that. There's a lot more of that in the captains, especially in the Bakula conversation where they talk about the cost of doing a long-running television show, that you're working 12 or 18 hours a day, and both of them, like I say, they have this bonding moment over the fact that it ruined both their marriages, being away that long.
I think, you know, and I have no idea what these guys' personal lives are like, but I think blaming Star Trek for ruining their marriages might be just a convenient scapegoat.
Yeah,
considering the fact that William Shatner has been married like 5 times.
Yes.
Did Star Trek ruin all of his marriages?
No. I think Bakula's a bit more genuine than Shatner is. Mm.
You know, well, as far as I know, Bakula never drowned anybody in a swimming pool.
I wasn't going to go there. I bit my tongue and I'm going to take the high ground on this show.
Oh, I went right for the low road.
You went right to the bottom of the pool.
So just like speak. No, no, you know what? I was inside taking a nap. She just happened to decide to take a swim with 30-pound weights in her pockets.
He was busy trying to remember Esperanto from when he was in that movie Incubus.
He was not found guilty. I have never seen Incubus, no.
Never seen him speaking Esperanto?
I have not seen him speak.
It's all over Esperanto. YouTube. It's hilarious. There's like a small one of like 13 minutes, and you can even watch the entire movie on YouTube if you so choose, if you want to learn. Immerse yourself in the Esperanto. Oh my God.
God, yeah. I don't know who you're doing that with.
Luckily, there's subtitles. Well,
Bill is the only other one I know who's seen it, so.
Yeah, right. Put myself in for that.
Poor Bill.
Oh, boy.
Poor Bill. All right, so I guess I have to get on to distant voices a little bit, huh?
Hmm.
Enter a world where nothing.
Who's that?
What is it? What's going on? Tell me.
He's going to kill us.
Is as it seems.
You're not going anywhere.
And the only thing that's real.
You can't escape, Doctor.
Is the fear of death.
He's gonna kill us all.
Jesse!
Next time on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
I got two. Well, I guess we'll wait till we do the synopsis because there's just. Yeah, I'll be quiet.
Thank you, Bill, for that pithy insight.
Well, I'm sure you'll be right there with me with one of my.
I probably will be.
Yes, about. I'm going to turn 30. Shut up.
30.
You're in a universe where you live to be 100 and flipping 30. Shut your hole.
Really?
You should be bitch when you're 60.
I mean? I was thinking he was a whining crybaby before I even considered the fact that they live to be like 130.
Yeah. I'm like, 30? 30? I had no problem when I hit 30. And you're going to... whatever.
30? You're in your prime.
I know. Well, for them.
For me, I'm in my prime.
30's the new, like, 10 for them. You know, come on.
We'll get back to this. We'll get onto this point a little bit more. But for now, Distant Voices is a Season 3 episode. It's episode number 18 of Season 3. It was directed by Alexander Singer. Teleplay by Ira Stephen Baer, Robert Hewitt Wolf. Story by Joe Manosky. And... the guest appearances are Andrew Robinson, Victor Rivers, and Anne H. Gillespie. It was originally aired on April 10th, 1995. At their usual lunch, Dr. Bashir confesses to Garrick his anxiety over his impending 30th birthday, explaining to the Cardassian that in human culture, age 30 is generally considered the end of youth and the beginning of the long, slow march into middle age. And Ben just interrupted there. Isn't middle age at about 65 now?
Roughly.
Yes, again. Their conversation is interrupted by Quark and his newest business associate, a Lethian named Altivar, who is looking to buy biomimetic gel, a highly restricted substance. Bashir refuses, and Altivar angrily storms off. When Bashir returns to the infirmary later, he finds Altivar has broken in and is stealing biomimetic gel from his medical supplies. Altivar attacks Bashir with an electric field, knocking him unconscious. When he awakens, he finds that he has begun to age quickly. Furthermore, the station is dark and deserted, apparently having undergone some catastrophe. Bashir explores the silent station and walks in on several members of the crew arguing. They barely notice him when he walks in and seem unfazed by his graying hair and wrinkling skin. Barely audible whispers echo in the background, and when Chief O'Brien begins repairing the communication system, Bashir hears that the whispers are actually the voices of his crewmates, and they're talking about him. They say he's in a coma and he is dying. Bashir realizes that the crew and the empty station are all in his head, and he is actually living in a dreamlike state within his comatose mind. Altivar appears, grabs Lieutenant Dax, and drags her away. Bashir feels that he has lost something and realizes that each member of the crew in this vision represents a different aspect of his personality. When Altivar captures Commander Sisko, it is as though he has taken away the most steady, able part of his psyche, crippling him. Altivar threatens to kill each crew member, chipping away at Bashir's mind until there is nothing left. Bashir ages quickly, reaching a weakened, elderly state. He and Garak go to Ops, where the last of the crew is dying. Garak prods Bashir, trying to convince him to just give up and die. But Bashir works hard with the last of his strength to find out what is going on. Garak becomes more insistent, and Bashir figures out that he is actually Altivar. Knowing this, he can shrug off Garak's taunting and make his way back to the infirmary, his home base on the station. This gives him more strength, and he uses it to trap and kill Altivar with the infirmary's sterilization field. He awakens from his coma, with his real crewmates keeping vigil over him. They inform him that he was battling Altivar's psychic illusion. The real Altivar tripped the infirmary's security alarm and was arrested by Odo shortly after the break-in. Afterwards, while Bashir is eating lunch with Garak, he appears hurt that Bashir's mind would present him as someone untrustworthy. He quickly adds with a bit of admiration that there's still some hope for Bashir. The end. Okay, two negative thoughts jump to mind on this one right away. First of all, in 30 years, they haven't improved the old man makeup from the deadly years. And it really is just takes well, me out of the story a little bit, honestly.
It's not that bad as he gradually, but then when they really showed him as elderly, it's like, whoa. Wow,
I even thought it was kind of bad as it gradually went, honestly. I just thought makeup effects were poor. And the other thing, and we've talked about this before, you know, for anybody who doesn't know, I'm pulling back the curtain a little bit. We record two episodes at a time when we sit down to record, just because schedules make it easier for us to do it that way rather than do one episode in a sitting. So we're doing Distant Voices right on the tails of having done the last episode, Visionary. And it's another episode where something unexplained is going on to a member of the crew, and you got to figure it out, and what's happening. It just seems a little bit too similar again. And I got to think the showrunners have got to do a better job of kind of putting a little separation between similar storylines.
Yeah, but is that because we're seeing them so literally? I watched them back to back, and I kind of thought that too, because you know we're like, well, yeah, well, let's get back to the main storyline. You know, what's driving the rest of the show? But if you had a week in between each viewing, it may not feel quite as I don't want to say PO'd, but maybe just annoyed that, like, oh, okay. But I mean, I still enjoyed this show, but yeah, I understand what you're saying. It's like, oh, okay, all right, this is a Bashir in a bottle show. Okay.
Yeah, it's just. I get your point. You know, when they did this 20 years ago, binge watching really wasn't a thing. You know, people you'd have to set the timer on your VCR if you wanted to, you know, watch them in a row. There was no DVRs, there was no Netflix, you know, nothing that allowed really for binge watching. So that wouldn't be a consideration. But I still got to think, if you're laying out your season, you want to put some separation between similar topics. So I still think it's kind of a bad job, but it's not. It wouldn't be as stark in 1995 as it is now, watching them back to back.
Well, on that, when we discussed Visionary, we mentioned that it sat on the shelf for a bit after being purchased as a spec pitch, as they tried to make it not feel like a Next Generation episode. This one also sat on the shelf for a while. It was pitched by Joe Minoski, who lived in Italy, and he was apparently responsible for a number of the episodes that were slightly weird and out there that weren't written by Brannon Braga. So the fact that they both ended up going into production back to back is just unfortunate. And we're in the middle of season three now. Do you think that this is the old we're running out of scripts as we've got to do 26 episodes a year thing that we've seen before? And they just dusted both of these two off. And the fact that they both ended up being similar, there was really nothing they could do. They needed the material.
Yeah, because this is when you had to do a 26 episode season, and now most shows are down to 22 if they have a full season, or if it's just, you know, more shows are going to like 10 to 13 episodes per season, and there's not a lot of fluff anymore.
Well, there's really nothing going on in this episode that ties into the greater storyline.
Well, in hindsight, I think we could say it might, but I'll wait to get to that later.
But I don't see any reason why I don't know how many episodes they'd have completed at the time that this aired. But if you had more episodes completed, I don't really see necessarily a problem with pushing this back two episodes. It's just if you're on the gun, this is the only one you have ready, and we got to deliver this episode to the to the broadcaster.
What's weird about that as well, Paul, is then you end up with four episodes in a row with Andy Robinson in.
And that would be a problem. Why?
Well, it isn't, because we've talked before about how magnificent we think he is, but maybe splitting his appearances up a bit more throughout the season, because then he's not in it again until, I don't think he's in this season at all. So we get four Andy Robinson episodes in a row, and then he's not in it again for the rest of the season. So yeah, splitting up the Garrick episodes may have been better.
Or maybe you push the O'Brien, the Visionary episode back a little. But I'm not sure how that falls, because that did have a connection to the greater story arc. So I'm not sure, because I'm kind of watching these as we go along. Rewatching them as we go along, and I'm not sure if we have anything in the next two or three episodes that would prevent you from doing that.
Well, I think as we get another Mirror Universe episode next, so they're normally standalones in and of themselves, but Through the Looking Glass and the Dying is cast is a really important two-parter. But then you've got a bit of fluff. You've got another Quark episode, you've got the episode where Jake and Sisko tootle around a bit. You've got Shakar, which I don't remember at all.
Maybe they could have left this one in that spot, but pushed Visionary back.
Yeah, and maybe moved Visionary, maybe swapped Visionary with Explorers or something like that.
And I mean, that's a minor criticism, honestly. It's one that it's a binge watching criticism. It's not like Bill, like you said, if you're watching it in broadcast order with a week in between every episode, maybe it's not as apparent. But I still think as a showrunner, you want to have a nice flow to the season. And at this point, full season DVDs may not have been the rage, but I think you could see, if you had enough foresight, you could see it coming in the future. Because they were releasing VHS tapes of full seasons. You know, you'd buy two episodes on a tape at that time. And DVDs were starting to become a thing around then. But no, actually, with DVDs, I think we're about a year off still from being a thing. So we're still in the VHS era in 1995. But I don't know. Maybe the whole criticism is silly, but that's my criticism.
No, it is. I think it's a valid one that they've ended up with two similar plots next to each other. Which is just it's a shame, really.
But why don't we dive a little bit into this plot? It's amazing how they've outlawed biomimetic gel, because right now you can go to any street corner and buy it.
Isn't that what they end up using?
Biomimetic gel does.
That's that stuff they use. Is that the same stuff they use in Voyager's like computer? Or was that just biogel or biopacks? But I thought it was biomimetic gel as well. Because remember their like computer core was organic or something like that? I don't know. It's been so long. I'm not up on my Voyager.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, this is not going to become a Voyager show. So you'll have to look elsewhere. Maybe Luke will do that one eventually. But, yeah, I mean, I guess it's just, it really is just a MacGuffin anyway. It's an excuse for them to have the storyline. I do, from a positive point of view, I do like the concept of every person in his dream world, fantasy world, unconscious world, represents
Coma Land.
Part of his personality.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a little hard to kind of get the whole, I guess the villainous guy has a certain psychic quality to him, that he's able to go into his mind and influence what's going on and create, you know, the threat there until he's finally able to overcome it.
Mm.
So, you know, conceptually, I think this is a pretty solid idea for a story. In execution, I really do lean on that first criticism. The makeup took me out of the story a lot. I thought it was really
good.
All right, well,
bad. Makeup aside, what do you think of Alexander Siddig's performance?
I thought it was just a little too one-note for me. I didn't feel like he, you know... I felt like he was channeling the same type of level of desperation slash exasperation slash confusion through the whole episode until he finally has his epiphany. I didn't feel it mounting as it went on. I don't know if that's a fair criticism, but that's the way I saw the acting. It didn't ramp up to me.
I preferred seeing the regulars as different facets of Bashir's personality. I thought that was a really interesting scene. And
they had
showed
acting stretch for them.
Yeah,
like, and outside of their character.
Again, demonstrated what good actors Nana Visitor and Rebbe Obojanwara are, and Armin Shimerman as well. That they were the more interesting scenes for me. Once you slap somebody in old age makeup, I'm like Paul. There's an episode of X-Files that does the same thing, and you kind of like, they've never managed to make old age makeup look convincing. Even now, CG enhancements don't make it any more convincing. And I'm just, it takes me out of it too much, the old age makeup stuff.
Well, even I think the most recent example of old age makeup would be in I can't remember which Marvel movie it was, with when they had Peggy Carter.
Yeah,
even she didn't quite pull it off.
Yeah, I thought with her they should have done a little bit more of the CGI instead of the practical makeup. The practical old age makeup does not work that well. I'm trying to think of an example where it really worked well, and I'm having a tough time.
I'm the same. It's like, you know, the Deadly Years kind of works because I think for a lot of us, that was probably the first place we saw it.
Yeah, yeah.
But then it always looks too, whether it's practical or CG, it always just looks too plastic. And I'd never buy it at all because real people don't age like that.
I mean, we could readily accept someone as Frankenstein or a vampire or an alien,
yeah,
but we can't accept them as an old person. Oh, that looks like makeup.
And yeah, we all know what old people look like.
I gotta think that they'd be much better off trying to CGI it the same, just the, you know, the opposite of what they do to CGI making them look younger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they take Michael Douglas and they make him look like he's 20 years younger, I think that works really well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that helps. They've said in that with actors like Michael Douglas and Robert Downey Jr., they've got footage of them from when they were young.
That is true.
So it makes it much easier for the CG people to do their wonder because they've got something to look at. You don't know what you're going to look like when you're older.
But
Shatner doesn't look anything like he did in the Deadly Years.
I think it's easy enough just to go through pictures after pictures after pictures and find somebody who looks like an older Robert Downey Jr.
Mm.
Or an older Alexander L. Siddig, and say, okay, we have a little frame of reference. Now I know what I have to create on
Malcolm McDowell. Malcolm McDowell.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame, really, that we don't all have the option that McGill Ferrer has. there's an episode of Magnum where his dad, what's his dad's name?
Jose Ferrer
hires Thomas Magnum to do something for him. I forget what the actual plot is. And then the story flashes back to the 1940s and Miguel Ferrer plays his dad as a younger man. And if you look at Miguel Ferrer now, he's the spitting image of Jose Ferrer for 30 years ago.
Mm. Well, if they did that in Doctor Who as well, remember?
Oh, yeah. Morgan Shepherd and Mark Shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you don't really have that luxury with Sid Egelfadil, do you?
Well, we don't know who his father is or what his father looks like now. But maybe they could have asked.
I guess his father could be Malcolm McDowell's brother.
I don't know.
Maybe.
You know, maybe it's, again, maybe it's overly nitpicky because it is, like we said, you know, we're having a tough time coming up with any episode where they aged somebody and they looked good. So it's probably unfair to single this one out, but this is the show we cover. So,
right. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, we can't just knock, you know, it's an industry-wide issue. It's not just, well, Deep Space Nine did this horribly. Well, nobody's really done it that great to begin with, so.
If somebody has an example, somebody listening has an example of a show or even a movie where they did a really, really good job of aging somebody, you know, send us an email because I'd be curious and maybe we'd hear that and say, oh, yeah, that's right. I don't know. Perhaps when we get to somebody's email about this episode, maybe he'll have a comment on it. I don't know. I haven't read it yet.
Perhaps. Now, in hindsight, with the character of Dr. Bashir, although we haven't got to this as our coverage goes, but do, you know, we get a little, I mean, it was teased before as to why he failed his final exam, whatever, not failed, but got that one question wrong, and he wasn't the valedictorian, blah, 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 that, you know,
I'm going to be 30 and I wasn't the valedictorian.
Well, because we had two episodes ago, he was up for that award and he was playing it down, and I was saying, well, maybe he's playing it down because of something that would be revealed in the future, and did he not want to succeed with his test, you know, that he didn't want to excel because he's actually hiding something? And again, did they have this in mind, or is it just a hindsight thing that we're just seeing this, it just happens to work out better that way?
Well, that's my question to you, is, you know, we've read the Bible entry on him, and clearly they did not have that plot point in mind.
Yeah, but we're now three seasons away.
I know, I understand that, and that's what I'm asking you.
Oh, okay.
And for, you know, spoilers, for anybody who doesn't want to know what's going to happen down the road, I'm going to mention it now, so you can jump ahead like 2 minutes. But in the future, we learn that his parents had him genetically advanced, and that's one of the reasons for his, you know, his abilities, that he's such a great doctor. Now, that said, do you think at this point in the show they've come up with this idea for him, or is it something that they still haven't even come up with yet?
Well, I'm having a hard time remembering when it's revealed in the show.
I think it's around season 5 or 6.
Well, maybe, because I'm trying to think what else could play into that between now and then. But, you know, things are going to ramp up next season and go in a completely different way, and then something else happens to Bashir that we won't spoil here. Hey,
I'm trying to find the episode where they reveal that. In the companion here, they say that in retrospect, it just worked out, implying that they didn't have it planned when they did this episode.
Okay.
See, we do research, people. Well, Andy.
Mm.
Andy's got a book. He's smart.
Yeah, proper book.
Elisha Cook Jr.
This is one of the best of those TV guidebooks. Because not only is there an awful lot of behind-the-scenes information in it, which is fascinating to people like me who like TV production and the effort that they go to, Ira Stevenberg and Ron Moore are never afraid to say when they don't think an episode works. And that's what makes this one interesting. It isn't an ass-kissing book. If Ira Stevenberg wrote a script and he thinks that script was shit, he'll say in this book, I think I wrote a shit script here.
It's easier to write a book that is not ass-kissing when the person you're writing about in the book admits to its flaws.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If he was more ego-driven and wouldn't admit to his weaknesses, maybe the book wouldn't have quite as much of that.
Hmm. No, so
I'll give him the credit for it. I think he made it easy for the writers of the book.
So if you've not got a copy of that, I don't know what this sells for on eBay. The Deep Space Nine.
If anybody wants to buy it and mail it to me, that's fine.
It really is worth trying to pick up, and it'll cost a lot to send it to Paul because it's very heavy. But it's highly recommended.
It's cheap. Send it over to me.
Yeah, send a copy to Paul.
Well, you send it media mail. It's not that expensive.
Yeah.
But no is the answer to your question. I don't think they knew at this point.
So I guess we'll stop barking up that tree.
I think at this point, with that as a premise, that they were still trying to make up for some of the poor characterization moments that made him so unlikable in season one. I think they're trying to show him as having not quite as big an ego as they initially made him look.
So like this is a redemption episode for Dr. Bashir.
Well, I think it's a redemption arc. Like, you know, you talked about that.
To put some meat on him, that he's not just this vapid, sex-crazed, you know, or just infatuated with Jadzia, love-struck little boy.
And totally ego-driven. You know, the last one with the award where he clearly wanted, you know, at the end you understand that he clearly wanted to win the award, but was downplaying it, you know, being self-deprecating, oh, I'm not old enough, I'm not this, I'm not that, but had already started planning out a victory speech, showed that he's got some area of his mind where he needs people to acknowledge him. You know, he's got some ego issues, not so much that he's an egomaniac, but that he's, you know, he needs people to recognize him. You know, he's a real person. And I think that's a much better way to portray him than in the, you know, in the first season when, again, he was just, you know, he was a perfect doctor and he was driven by his libido and, you know, really kind of vapid. So I do like this Bashir much better. I think ever since, I'm trying to remember which episode was, I think it may have been one of the ones where him and O'Brien have some sort of interaction, not the stupid storyteller one, but maybe a different one, like you know, along those lines. But I think that's when all of a sudden they realized we have to make this guy likable, and he's not right now.
Well, let's move on to the Cardassian in the room, and we get a little nugget of information from Garak when they're having lunch that Cardassian mysteries always end with everyone being guilty. And Garak says, well, the entertainment is finding out who is guilty of what.
Well, yeah.
So basically, they're all Agatha Christie writers, I guess, on Cardassia Prime.
Well, I always like when they give you a little nugget of how their culture is just different than ours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not that they don't have a culture, and it's not that there's no basis for it. It's just that it's different.
And
I prefer that way of looking at things to, you know, oh, they're just, you know, evil lizard people.
And Garak is a mean tennis player?
I would imagine Garak is mean at everything.
He's just taunting good old Dr. Bashir and his little... Wasn't Bashir wearing a tennis outfit, too, if I remember correctly, or am I imagining that? But Garak wasn't. He was just in his regular Cardassian clothes.
Wouldn't it have been cool if, like, Morn was the embodiment of his intellect?
I wanted to see Morn, like, his embodiment of his, like, his sloth or something. Or his libido. Like, yeah,
no, I don't care. Sloth is not good, because sloth is just him sitting in a chair, which is what we get from Morn all the time. I always like when they portray Morn as being, you know, totally different than what we see. Like when
they could have had a talk.
You know, Jadzia talking about how he was such a ladies' man, or back when he had hair. And stuff like that. I get a kick out of that.
Yeah, if they'd had him be this really erudite with a cravat and a smoking jacket up. Like an Oliver Coward kind, with one
of
those cigarette holders.
Which is kind of how I picture you when we're not on the air, Andy.
That's exactly how I am, yes. I'm not sat here in Adidas trainers and Levi's jeans at all. I've got me velvet crush dressing gown on and me cravat and me cigarette holder. I'm in monocle.
Oh, so you're the Mr. Peanut monocle guy.
Mr. Peanut.
I'm thinking either a cravat or a dickie.
Yes. Perhaps. Well, I always dress up for these podcasts. I'm here now in my James Bond tux.
Yeah, bow tie is probably a common look for you.
Yeah, yeah, all the time. But that's more.
Bill in one of those one-piece pajamas, but like a buddy suit.
Or a Superman costume.
All right, laugh it up.
Fuzzball.
I don't know, is there anything more on this one for us to discuss?
Andrew Robinson steals the show.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever he's on camera. I mean, he's not enough of the focus of this episode to have stolen the episode.
No, but he steals whatever scene he's in, basically.
Yes, because he's playing, you know, Bashir's like, what part of my psyche do you represent? Mm-hmm. Well, of course, by then, Bashir's become Yoda.
Too old you are. Begin training.
I look forward to getting some scenes with Garrick and Gul Dukat. Mm. I think we have a while before we get any, but I'm looking forward to getting them.
Oh, one other. I just gotta say, tennis balls. Anyone?
Like the triples.
Should be behind this hatch, right? Help me open this.
All the tennis balls fell out. It's like, you know, on Captain Kangaroo, when the moose would say ping pong balls and all the ping pong balls would drop out of the sky. It's like, tennis balls everywhere. No? Nobody watched Captain Kangaroo except me? Nothing?
You're alone.
You never watched Captain Kangaroo?
Well, I may have as a kid. I have very little
memory. You don't remember the puppet moose that would sit at the counter and he'd say, ping pong balls! He'd get the captain to say something and then they'd just drop all these ping pong balls out of the sky and they'd bounce off of them. Would have really hurt if they were golf balls. That would have been pretty sad, you know. Knocked out Captain Kangaroo. Mr. Green, you just have to come along and drag him off the set. Wait, I'm going through in the fan fiction or something. I don't know what's going on there.
Anyway.
So, tennis.
Anyway. You got to be wondering, what would Blaine say? You are wondering that, aren't you?
I'm wondering that.
Well, Blaine would say, hi, guys. Old makeup had gotten a lot better since they did The Deadly Years with the original series crew back in 1967. But even in 2016, TV budgets don't have enough room to make it convincing. It's a somewhat interesting character exploration, but ultimately ends up somewhat bland. Not particularly bland or off-putting, just bland. It entertains me while watching it, partly because you can't go wrong with Garrick. But once it's over, it's easily forgotten. It probably doesn't help that the story hinges on anxiety about turning 30, which I never felt turning 30, and still feel like I have more life ahead of me than behind me at age 39. Given my diet and exercise habits, my doctor would likely disagree, but that's how I feel. I will say this, though. We spent practically the entire episode inside Dr. Bashir's head and were privy to his most private thoughts. Clearly, he can't possibly be harboring any secrets about who or what he is that could have been potentially relevant to this story. Blaine. So, yeah, well, we discussed that as far as the, you know, is it foreshadowing or had they not yet decided? And we've concluded that they haven't decided it yet. So I guess it's just a little bump in the road as far as that goes. But, yeah, that's okay. And, yeah, back to the whole 30, I'm turning 30 thing. I got to think at that point in time, turning 50 might be more of a moment, you know, where you feel like you're middle-aged. Which I always took as the age that Captain Kirk was turning in The Wrath of Khan.
Yeah. Well, that was actually Shatner's age at that point as well, wasn't it?
So. He was right around 50. I don't know if he was 50 on the nose, but he was right around that area.
Wow, really? Man. I'm old.
Oh, yes.
Truly the best
of times. You really are. But, yeah, I mean, I just don't see it as, you know, I see that as the equivalent today of somebody, you know, being upset because they're turning 16.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've yet to meet the person who's upset because they're turning 16.
I'll be, because then all my kids will be able to, you know, once Ben turns 16, he can drive. I'll be upset.
You have to be 17?
No, you can get a learner's permit, I think, at 15. I think you could drive at 16.
Yeah, over here, you can get a learner's permit at 16, but you have to be 17 to get a license.
Yeah, I don't know.
And that's only with having taken a formal driving class. Otherwise, I think you have to be 18.
Luckily, Sarah drug her feet, so she's only now coming into that. It'll be some time before I have to figure out that insurance nightmare.
Yeah. Okay, so you want to rate this?
Yeah, go on.
All right. My initial inclination on this was to say on a 5-point scale that this is dead in the middle at 3 because it's average. Or actually dead in the middle at 2.5 because it's average. But I think Garrick pumps it up a little bit. I think the concept of the different characters portraying parts of Bashir's personality and mind also bump it up a little bit. I think some of the acting, although I didn't think El-Sadig Fadil's acting was so great in this particular episode, I did think some of the supporting cast kind of propped it up a little for him. So I'm gonna bump it up a point, and I'm gonna give it a 3.5 because I did find it to be an entertaining episode.
Yeah, I thought it more entertaining than a number of other Bashir-centric episodes. I think that's largely because of the gimmick, and also Andy Robinson's in it, and the rest of the cast get to show their acting chops by portraying different elements of Bashir's psyche. So that was all good. Quark's brilliant in it, as usual. It's just, you know, I kind of feel about this one what you two felt about the last one. I didn't not like it. I enjoyed it while I was watching it. I've pretty much already forgotten it. So I'm probably going to go 3.5 as well.
I guess we're all going with 3.5. It'll be 3 preganglionic fibers and a half a postganglionic nerve. Or wait, or is that 3 postganglionic nerves and a half a ganglionic fiber? Anyway, 3.5. Yes, for everything that we've already said, it's nice to see the other characters, the other actors explore. It's nice to see Sidig as Yoda, and Andrew Robinson as Garrick,
or as the Nagus.
Oh, boy.
All right, so I guess that's it. We don't have any email right now. We have a rare moment where we have an empty email bag.
The sack is empty.
I got nothing in my sack. Ew.
You're shooting blanks. Oh, sorry.
So that'll be it for this week. And what are we going to do next time?
Next time on our all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, we're going back through the looking glass to journey to the Mirror Universe. Again. Ooh, Kira. Mirror Kira. Ooh.
The intended.
Ooh. Oh, I'm getting all funny.
What is she intending?
She can intend me.
She intends to get Andy excited. That's what she does. Andy's getting a little too excited, so I think we're going to sign off now. Goodbye,
yeah, there's a picture in the companion that's yes. Bye. I'll be in my room.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
That was the end. That was the question. I was doing rock. Not Rocky, but rock. From What a Little Girl's Made Of.
Oh, that big, rock. Okay.
Yeah.
He was left here by Rook. The old ones.
The old ones. Ooh, that sounded kind of good. What was it? What does he say? Survival overrides programming or something like that.
Survival overrides programming.
No, yeah. That's where Kirk has the giant phallic stalagmite.
Yes.
Or stalactite penis. You've not seen that, Paul? Or you don't
I have,
remember that?
I'm trying to...
To block it out?
Yes, exactly.
It's a big psychedelic colored Johnson.
Yeah. I have to admit, I was not all that enamored with that particular visual.
Oh, to each his own.
And that's what makes this world so wonderful.
What a wonderful world.
Yeah, if you want to see William Shatner holding a massive fake, we've got you covered.
I say to myself, what a wonderful schlong.
Oh, what are you covering on? Is it Jaws?
Smokey and the Bandit.
Smokey and the Bandit!
Oh.
Excellent. Straight to iTunes.
Let's download that for my trip to the gym later.
With the mighty Chris Franklin.
Awesome.
I saw that movie with my grandmother, and we missed the first like 10-15 minutes, and she asks the theater people. She tasks me, yeah. We're sitting there, and she asked the theater, like they come in to clean the theater, and you know, so my little, well, let me see, she would have been probably in her 50s or, well, she was probably in her 60s then. Late 50s, early 60s, and she asked them, she's like, could we stay and just watch the first 10-15 minutes of the movie because we missed it? And they're like, oh, sure. Then we sat there and watched the whole movie again.
Well, that used to be a thing. I remember that when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You'd go to the movies. You wouldn't even look to see what the starting time was. If you wanted to know the starting time, you had to look in the newspaper, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
But you would go, and if the movie was underway, you'd just go in and you'd sit down, and then you'd say, okay, well, in the next showing, we'll watch the beginning. And it's just such a weird perspective now to think of it that way. Now it's like, if I can't be there for the beginning of the movie, I don't want to go. I want to go some other time.
Right.
But back then, that was like a normal course of behavior.
Yeah. You know, and you could just watch it twice. Yeah. And that was still when movies would be re-released, like the next summer. Because I remember seeing Star Wars well after its initial run, because it just got re-released like the following, like up until right up until The Empire Strikes Back came out, like maybe in the summer of 79. I remember going to see that in the theater, and they don't do like the movie re-release anymore.
I remember reading somewhere Superman was still in theaters over here the following Christmas after it came out. You could still go to the cinema and see Superman a year later.
Smokey and the Bandit.
Eastbound and down, loading up and trucking, and we gonna do what they say can't be done.
I think I used to, yeah, it was with Ben. We were driving home, and my wife had called to complain. I'm glad she's asleep right now. My wife had called to complain about something, and I said, I turned to Ben, I'm like, when we get home, remind me to smack your mother right now. And Ben just looks at me, what? Like, it's in a movie, Ben. Oh, okay. Like, yeah, I'll have to let you watch Smokey and the Bandit. Daddy, I lost my hat.
Poor Jen.
Oh, I love my wife.
Aww.
She hates me.
Have you watched the trailers for the new Spider-Man movie?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
So good.
I'm not 100% sure yet. I mean, I'm going to see it. There's no question I'm going to see
it. Yeah, I thought it was great. I really did.
I'm a little thrown off by the fact that they have Miles Morales' sidekick as Peter Parker's sidekick.
Well, apparently he's not. Apparently he's Ned Leeds.
That's Ned Leeds?
Apparently so.
That's Ned Leeds, really.
Future Hobgoblin? Wasn't Ned Leeds the Hobgoblin at some point?
The Hobgoblin.
Yes, he was the Hobgoblin.
He was the Hobgoblin.
Did I say
Hobgoblin?
I thought he said Hobbler. Hobgoblin?
Hobo That'll be the goblin? Next new character they're going to come up with.
How do you say
just
it? It's Hobgoblin?
Bill. The Hobgoblin.
No, it's just Hobgoblin.
Oh.
Not the Hobblegoblin. The Gobblegoblin. That's a completely different thing, dude.
I added an extra O there, so he'd be the Hobgoblin. Get any spare change, Spider-Man?
Apparently, yes, he's Ned Leeds, according to the cast list that has
he
been
may
leaked.
Be named Ned Leeds, but he's clearly, yeah, but he's, what's him, Genki from the Brian Michael Bendis, Miles Morales, Ultimate Spider-Man series.
Yeah. But I've never read any Miles Morales, so I didn't know who that was.
I think that's his name. It's like Genki or something like that. But, I mean, we'll see. You know, I was very entertained by him in Civil War. I'm still not sure he's the Peter Parker I picture in my mind, or that I've pictured in my mind the last 40-something years. So I'm just not sure. I'm sure, you know, I'm going to see it. There's no question. But, you know, I'm reserving judgment.
I thought he
Although
looked
Although the second trailer for Guardians had me giggling like a schoolgirl.
No, yeah, I haven't seen that one yet.
Oh, that is good. There's
I'm
a
just
wonderful
concerned
Drax scene in it.
The Drax scene and even the Groot stuff. It just was cracking me up. I'm just concerned that they're going to go too heavily into comedy, and it might lose me a little there. But
I don't think so.
They've shown good judgment on it so far, so I should just have trust.
So do you see you and I in the Rocket Groot scene? You're playing Rocket, I'm playing Groot. Oh,
yeah, absolutely. There's no question. And Andy, when you do finally see that trailer, picture it that way.
Okay.
Well, In fact, I want to find the trailer right now for you to watch.
Yeah, yeah, let's just do it right now. Because I'm just laughing at when Star-Lord, when Rocket yells at the Star-Lord, he's like, does anybody have any tape? And Star-Lord's like, no! You've got an atomic bomb in a bag! Why wouldn't you be the one that has tape? Yeah, that trailer was funny. Get tears in my eyes just laughing about it.
Ooh, okay. I've just put iTunes on and Bins is downloading as well. That's what I like to say.
Oh, that should be our invasion coverage on the shows.
There you go, Andy. There's your Guardians trailer.
Okay. Let's all bring it up at the same time. Ooh, yeah, man, that was my stomach. Do you guys hear that?
Beginning.
Let me get mine up.
Excuse me.
Ah! Oh my God, that was loud. I got to turn that volume down.
Pump up the volume. Pump it up. Pump it up.
Dance, boom, 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 boom. That's what we should do. We should do like, rap song.
Let me know when you're ready to watch.
Make sure that all the ads are gone.
All right, I've got it paused at 0000.
Okay, right. As do I. So ready, we'll do it on three. 1, 2, 3.
Now, whatever you do, don't push this button. Because that will set off the bomb immediately and we'll all be dead. Now repeat back what I just said.
Andrew?
No! That's the button that will kill everyone! Try again.
I'm Groot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Groot.
Uh-huh.
I'm Groot.
No!
Showtime, a-holes. Over the death button.
Nobody has any tape.
Not a single person has tape.
You have an atomic bomb in your bag. If anybody's gonna have tape, it's you.
I have to do everything.
You are wasting a lot of time.
That's a really bad sign.
If I touch someone, I can feel their feelings.
You feel love.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, I feel a general unselfish love for just about everybody.
No, sexual love.
No, I don't.
For her.
No.
She just told everyone your deepest, darkest secret.
Dude, come on. I think you're overreacting a little bit.
You must be so embarrassed. Do me.
See, now I'll never see that again without thinking of you and I, Bill. But I could also, that last scene, I could also see you being Drax and Scott being Star-Lord.
Oh, that was so good. There we go.
As long as they don't go too heavily into the comedy, it looks great. Well, the other one, did you see the trailer for the new Planet of the Apes movie?
I've not watched that one yet either.
Oh, yeah.
Also
War
looking good.
Woody Harrelson?
Yeah.
Or was that Matthew McConaughey from the Dragon
movie?
Sure,
it's Woody
Harrelson. Yeah, no, but he looked just like Matthew McConaughey did when he did the one with the dragons with when he's driving the tank that had Christian Bale in it. Yeah, that was. Oh, did you guys see the Mummy trailer?
Nope.
Actually, it looks really interesting. And I had forgot that they're creating this whole connected Universal Studios monster universe like Marvel's done, and this is the kickoff of it.
You're right.
And Russell Crowe apparently plays Dr. Jekyll.
Ooh.
Mmm.
Ooh, that's quite a good cast, isn't it?
Yeah, so, there
I
we
like
go.
That cast.
All right. So.
Yeah, just close that.
Might as well
weeks.
Get into this 37:30.
Oh, 12:30.